Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to a podcast on CelticUnderground.net. This podcast rocks.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
Before we get into the meat and bones of this week's podcast, I'd just like to thank everybody, the many hundreds of you, literally, who have taken the time and effort to send in an email to podcasts@CelticUnderground.net for the Celtic Underground Top 10. So many votes have to be collated, so that's all being done and verified and counted, along with the Samaras Award. So, we have podcasts galore. This week's podcast is with one of the owners of the Glasgow Rocks basketball team, hence the reason for the rather corny, cheesy start to the podcast. And, well, you'll soon find out why they're on a Celtic Underground podcast. Thereafter, we've got umpteen podcasts lined up. We've got the St Anthony's just done an interview with Mark Reid, my first Celtic team that I could read out, Bonnie McGrain, Reid, Aiken McCann, McLeod, Problems, Dave McGarvey, Burns and Nicholas. There you go. And then we have an interview with Altied, which gives us a Rest 12 update following the Craig White trial. We also have a fantastic interview with Martin McCarty, who is the author of the Lions of Lisbon play, which you will be able to catch up with and get more information on. But before we get into all of those, we will also have a Celtic Underground year-end review multi-participant podcast, which will be coming up very shortly as well, which will cover the cup final, fantastic Roger Goal, and then of course there'll be the Celtic Underground top 10. So enough of me. This is me, Harry Breedy, with him, Duncan Smiley, of Glasgow Rocks.
Be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.
Hey. Before we get into the meat of, you'll be wondering who Duncan is. We need to get his credentials sorted out to be on the Celtic Underground podcast. So before we start, Duncan, who was your first Celtic hero and what was your first Celtic game?
My first Celtic game was September 1979. So I was eight. Mm-hmm. It was actually up at Pittodrie.
Right.
And my dad, who was actually a Hearts fan, mm-hmm. And take me a few Hearts games, the reserve games and kids games and what have you. But my uncle, who's a big Celtic fan and had been in Lisbon, decided that me, my dad and my cousin Paul, who I go to the football with now, that we'd go to the game up at Pittodrie. And in 1979, didn't cross our minds it was an all-ticket game. Uh-huh. So we went up in September, I remember getting to Pittodrie and first of all being told that no, you can't get in because it's an all-ticket game. And then my uncle speaking to a policeman, and a policeman gave him four tickets for the main stand, mm-hmm. at Pittodrie, and we went in, and the first thing that I remember is just the brightness of the colours, the green pitch, and then seeing Celtic in their hoops and Aberdeen in their bright red. It was just, the colours were just like mind-blowing, because I just see football like everybody on the telly. And it was a good game, I remember it, and Tommy Burns got sent off for a horrific challenge on Gordon Strachan halfway through the second half, and Celtic won. And I can remember being hooked and bugging my dad when they came back to take me, and he didn't want to go to Celtic Park, because he was a Hearts fan but not really a football fan. So that was my first Celtic game. I remember going to a testimonial game, the Dan McGrain's testimonial, mm-hmm. against Manchester United, yep. one of the first games that Paddy Bowner played. I remember going to that, and then from then on I just latched on to neighbours and family and friends that would take me to Celtic Park, and I was absolutely hooked. And my first Celtic hero was Charlie Nicholas. Mm-hmm. I thought at the time I was a Charlie Nicholas in waiting. I had the mullet, I had everything except the ability and the fitness to be the next Charlie Nicholas. Even the extent that my oldest son is called Charlie.
Right.
After Charlie Nicholas. And the irony is, I see Charlie on a regular basis now in the pub. And I think the restraining order's just a bit wearing off now, but he was my first Celtic hero.
How did you feel when he left?
I was devastated. I was absolutely devastated. In fact, I think I can remember going in a right huff. I'd have been, I don't know, 14 or 15 mm-hmm. when Charlie went down to Arsenal, and I was absolutely devastated. And I mean, I went, I remember only once in my life I had a scrapbook, and I had a Chadwick Nicholas scrapbook, and every wee snippet that was in the paper, even after he went down to Arsenal, I was absolutely gutted. And then even when he came back, I was just glad that he was back. Mm-hmm. Although maybe his best years ever behind him, and looking back now with hindsight, he probably went to the wrong place. I think he went down to London for the wrong reasons.
Nice, yeah.
I think he probably could have gone to Manchester United or Liverpool at that time, but I was gutted when he left.
Although people say he maybe came back and he was maybe past his best, but I often use Charlie Nicholas as an example of how players can sometimes age overnight, because when he first came back, I'm sure his first season, maybe even his first two seasons, he was mid-20s goals.
Yeah.
And then the last season, which I think coincided with Lou Macari and all the mess that was going on at Celtic, he suddenly couldn't hit a Ballon d'Or. And I sometimes wonder if it was the high life of living down in London had caught up with him. But
I was going to say, but I'm pretty sure he wasn't living the 24/7 athlete philosophy down in London, not based on all the girls that were hanging off his arm that you've seen in the sun on a weekly basis and all the gold that was dripping around his neck. But he certainly had a good time, that's for sure.
So that's got your credentials sorted out. We are sitting, I am, from where I'm sitting just now to paint a picture, I can see the roof of Hampden Park. If I could turn round much closer, I'd be able to see Celtic Park. I'm looking over the car park of the Emirates Arena. So do you want to explain why I'm sitting talking to a Celtic fan in offices at the Emirates Arena?
Probably a good question. And I think, unashamedly, I'm a big fan of your podcast, Ryan, and if nothing else, a great self-publicist. So for the avoidance of doubt, I sent Brian an email saying, I want to go on your podcast. So I've been at the Rocks, and for those of you that don't know, it's probably most that are listening to this podcast, the Glasgow Rocks are Scotland's only professional men's basketball team. We play out of the Emirates Arena, just across the road from Celtic Park. We compete in the British Basketball League. It's a league of 12 teams. Let's say we're Scotland's only team in that. We finished third in that league last season, and we get beaten one of the cups. We get beaten in the final, unfortunately for us. So we're about 17 years old as a franchise. I'm in week 10 mm-hmm. As co-owner of the Glasgow Rocks, and I guess maybe interestingly, more so than me, the guy that owns the other half of Glasgow Rocks is David Lowe, mm-hmm. who most people will know from a Celtic perspective to the Fergus McCann. You know, David was very close and one of the front men when Fergus McCann bought the club, what must be 20 odd years ago now,
March 1994.
There you go.
So tell us a bit more about, we can get into how you end up owning a basketball franchise.
Yeah.
Why you called it a franchise, because football fans don't like that sort of terminology. So tell us when the season runs, the basketball season in the UK.
Yeah, so it's not too dissimilar to football. The season finishes in the middle of May and it starts up again at the end of September. And the format is there's a 12-team league, and you play each other three times. I know it's a bit weird, but not too different to the Premier League for football. But you play 33 games, and then the top eight teams go into a playoff. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the season, the higher the league you finish, you get a better player position. So first place eighth, second place seventh, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing, going through the quarter final, semi final, and then a final at those two, the middle of May, and then again, like football, there's two cups that we compete for as well through the season. And we've been the nearly men. Yeah, we did win the championship, but about 12 seasons ago. Mm-hmm. And since then, we've been in 9 finals.
Right.
And unfortunately, lost 9 finals. Some would say the Hibs of basketball.
So that's the season, and we'll get on to various other things. But how did you get involved in the Rocks?
Well, I don't have a basketball background. I love sport. Obviously, my first sport is football. I also enjoy rugby, mm-hmm. Watching rugby. I also enjoy cricket, as I know you do as well. That makes two of us up here. But I really
more people play cricket in Scotland than play rugby. That's one of my favourite stats.
There you go. Not at my school they didn't. They wouldn't have been putting cricket bats in people's hands at my school. And I also enjoy golf, but I spent a lot of time in the States business wise. And I've been to all the American sports, and I've really enjoyed American football and even ice hockey. Not so much the baseball, which I found quite boring, but I've been to a few basketball games in the States, and I've really enjoyed it as an experience. And as a sport, it's a very exciting sport. But I'd be lying if I said I was a big basketball fan, although I am 10 weeks in. I'm a really big fan. The game has actually hooked me. So my journey here was very quick and very impulsive, which I guess is probably my nature. But I, long story short, David Lowe's wife, Noelle, also sits. I sit in the children's panel in Glasgow, and Noelle sits on the children's panel as well. She spotted a Celtic keyring. You mind? She started talking about Celtic in between a couple of cases, and it was the day before the first Rangers game of the season, where we beat them 5-1, and we were talking about that. And she mentioned that her husband was David, and I, in a probably creepy sort of way, said, "Sort me out on a date with your husband. I wouldn't mind meeting David and have a chat with him." And I went and met with David, and in all honesty, I was just looking to make a contact with somebody that might be useful to me from a business perspective. And when I met David, I met him at a coffee shop in Glasgow, and he said to me that he was part owner, joint owner of the Glasgow Rocks. I'd never even heard of the Glasgow Rocks. He explained to me who they were, where they played. Must admit, didn't really float my boat. And then David asked me along to a game, and I went home, and I was going to come to a game that Sunday. And we play on Friday nights and Sunday afternoons, and I came along to the game, and I must admit I was a bit underwhelmed. I thought, I'm going to go here, there's going to be a couple of kids cutting about the gym hall with a basketball, and I was blown away by the game day experience. I came to the Emirates and it was just amazing. It was really, really exciting. The whole game day experience, the music, the cheerleaders, the game, very, very fast paced. I mean, it's over like from sort of tip off, and I say tip off because I keep calling it kick off, and I call the court a pitch, and I'm getting in trouble all the time for it, and it's not a team, it's a franchise. So don't hate me for that, but I'm trying to learn. But I came in, and the whole game day experience was absolutely magnificent, and then the Rocks won. But in all honesty, I was blown away by it, and I thought, I want to get involved in this. Unfortunately, timing wise, my predecessor here, that owned the shares that I bought, he was looking to retire. He'd been here, he formed his franchise say 17 years ago now, and he was looking, and the timing was good in it. And I decided, right, I can't be a wee bit involved in something, I've got to be all in. So I bought half the shares, and I say this is week 10 for me, and this is my job now. And in all honesty, it doesn't feel like work. It's really, really good fun working in and around sports. A great arena, and I'm really, really looking forward to the new season. The pre-season starts probably beginning of August, mid-August, as we get some players arriving. And we're actually announcing our new coach this week. So I don't know, by the time this goes out, we might have had a new coach, but we should be new coach in place here, sat at his desk within the next week or so, but we're announcing that this week.
So the biggest challenge you've got as an outsider looking in, well, first of all, people in Scotland tend to not be comfortable with terms like franchise. They like things to be traditional, and franchise smacks as American commercialism. So the Rocks didn't start in Glasgow.
No, we've been nomads, really. We started, and again, this is anecdotal, but we started our life in Edinburgh. We played at the Commonwealth Arena through in Edinburgh, and then that was just really getting a bit old, and we were looking for a new home. And then we moved to Brayhead when Brayhead opened, and then we had a good couple of seasons there. And unfortunately, as we got a bit of a sweetener deal when they were opening, and then when they got a wee bit more successful, our rent went through the roof and we couldn't afford it. So we then had a couple of years at the Kelvin Hall, which we played in, and then we moved to the Emirates Arena when this arena opened. So it opened for the Commonwealth Games in 2012, so we're getting into our fifth year here now at the Emirates Arena. It's a fantastic arena. I mean, it really is. And speaking to the other owners, it's arguably the best arena with the best facilities in the league. And I guess the good news for anybody listening to this, is that the perception of the Glasgow Rocks fans are that they're the loudest and the rowdiest and the noisiest in the league, which makes me feel good.
A Glasgow place where the reputation is that they're louder and rowdier and...
and you can have a beer here if you're watching the game.
So that's one of the big things I was going to say. If you've listened to our podcast, you know, I'm a non-drinker, but one of my bugbears is the way that... Well, 2 weeks ago I went to the Hydro and there was 12,000 football fans in the Hydro for a football event, and met my brother outside. We go inside and he walks up and buys a beer that he's not allowed to do at Celtic Park, and we can get into that on another day. But what's different about the match day or the whatever day of whatever day event, a game day event, what's different about the game day event here compared to a football game?
I mean, I think it is very different. I mean, look, I love football. I mean, we're in a football city, in a football country. We're obsessed with football. Me and you are part of the problem, but hopefully part of the solution as well. But it's a very different experience to football. It's very family orientated. There are a lot of kids from about 4 and 5 upwards that come to the game, and it suits their attention span. I know you've got a young son. My kids are a wee bit older now, but trying to keep their attention, I've never taken my kids to Celtic Park and I'm nearly falling asleep. Because I wanted them to go to Celtic Park. rather than
20 minutes in, they're asking if it's over yet.
My kids, the first time I took them, it was in the Henrik Larsson days. My wee boy got up at half time and put on his jacket, because he'd only ever watched football on the telly and he'd never seen a half time. He just thought when the game finished at half time, that was over. But no, it's a totally different game day experience. You come here, this is very family orientated. There's no swearing in the crowd, and even on the court, there's a real no tolerance approach to that. So it's not the football crowd, and on the court, it's very much a no swearing policy, and no sort of bad general behaviour that you see a lot in football and back chat and what have you. But see, it's all around making it an experience for people coming, and even a lot of fans have said to me that, and it doesn't resonate with me, because I hate losing. I'm not sure whether I like winning more than I hate losing. I'm not sure, but a lot of them say it's more about the event and coming here and seeing a good game, and on some occasions it doesn't really matter who wins. That wouldn't be my attitude.
No,
but it's a great experience. There's lots of music, get cheerleaders there,
I suppose,
mascot.
If you're a first time attendee or first U-time attendee, that's going to be more likely. It's not like football fans who, you know, Brendan Rodgers' famous quote, which would be the same, you know, have you fallen in love with this club? Well, I've always been a Celtic supporter. There's no you start to go into the games as a fan. I suppose that's the big difference here. You're building a fan base, so when people are dipping their toe in the water of attending, they're not a Glasgow Rocks fan per se, so they're going and enjoying the event. It will take time for someone to then become passionate about being in a bad mood for the rest of the day because their team's lost.
And you know, and it's funny you should say that, because I can remember my teenage self being like a right wee huffy boy if the result didn't go our way, and I would go into a sulk for a couple of days and I'd be unbearable. And even in my early 20s it was like that. I've sort of got over it in football, where I hate losing but it doesn't ruin my weekend. And I've only been here 5 minutes, and we got put out of the playoffs this year with London, and I was horrible. I was grumpy, I was in a bad mood. But I guess it's my job now, it's my livelihood, but it really, really got to me. But you're right, the fans that come here, I guess there's a mixture of fans that there'll be. We get about average attendance is just over 2,000 a game here at the Emirates, and I would imagine that 1,000 of those guys have no interest in football at all, and they'd be quite happy taking their family to the rugby or to the ice hockey out at Brayhead or doing something different. They just don't want to be part of the football scene for whatever reason. And then the other 1,000 are, there'll be Celtic fans, or there'll be Rangers fans, Partick Thistle fans, whoever in the city, and they're coming along just to do something different. And again, we've got a lot of sponsors on board. The corporate guys, that it's easier for them to justify within their company spending some money on a sports event, because it's not as expensive as football, and it's not Celtic, because if you do Celtic you need to do Rangers or vice versa or anything like that. And it's a different environment, because if you go to football hospitality wise or you go to the Warriors for the rugby, it's quite a male dominated boozy environment. And even though
I know people, I mean, I'm not a rugby person, but I know people who go to the rugby because it's a place where you can go and have a pint at a sport event. I mean, that's their only reason for going with a couple of other mates, for the very reason of it's a bit of an excuse to not go to the pub but still get a pint.
And is that, and I know that I've been out to the Warriors and it's fantastic out there, and they're burst at the scenes. We've got a waiting list for hospitality and for season tickets. But again, I think it's difficult nowadays. If you've been working all week, and if you're working all week as a guy, and you go home and you say to your wife and your kids, here, I'm away at the rugby on Saturday, drop me off at 10 o'clock, I'll be back at 7 o'clock and you're away boozing. That's a tough sell at home.
Yeah.
Whereas if you go home and saying, here, my company or my supplier or my business partners have given me 4 tickets for the family to go to the basketball on Friday evening or on Sunday afternoon, that's an easier sell. And I think when I'm out, a big part of my role here, in fact the only part of my role here, is generating more income for the team. I'm getting that through sponsors, and when I go out cap in hand asking for money, I'm finding it a wee bit easier than some of the things I've been involved in the past, because part of the role of the club is we do a lot of work in the community, and that makes it easier for companies with the corporate social responsibility aspect of their business, is that if they can stick their logo on one of our training tops or our jerseys, and we're out there, and we're in front of 10,000 kids every year teaching them about diet, health, fitness, sport, basketball, and they bring some of the kids back here and they'll get a game at half time in front of the crowd, it makes it an easier sell to companies to try and get the marketing dollars are harder and harder to get every year from those companies. So they get the corporate social responsibility aspect taken care of, and they get a good match day experience when they come here with their staff or with their clients or whoever it may be.
So you mentioned there about working with schools and working out there in the community, and one of the criticisms of football in the last 15-20 years is the diminishing involvement of professional footballers, particularly for the bigger clubs, in local community. So do you get the players to buy into that?
We do get the players to buy in, and just on that point, but I think that there is a lot of negativity, and I'm aware of the work that Celtic in particular do, the Celtic Foundation, the work that Tony does there with all the guys that are there, and I've seen that firsthand, and I know that they've funded the food bank that's in the shadow of Celtic Park, and a lot of the players around there as well help them out making up food parcels and stuff, and like, there's obviously good news, doesn't sell newspapers.
They
seem to shy away from that aspect, that maybe because Celtic are doing good stuff in the community and other clubs aren't, then we'll better no report on it. Let's focus on something negative. But it's very different here. A big part of what we do is that when a player comes here, they have to sign up contractually, they have to sign up to delivering, I think it's a minimum of 6 hours a week community work. And what that looks like is we'll get in front of 10,000 kids, mostly in schools, but some after school stuff in basketball. So we'll send the players out on a daily basis to the schools, and they'll be doing chats, talks to the kids. It's not just schools. We were out with the players out at Pullman Young Offenders last year, and we've done a lot of things in and around that area where we're going out and saying, look, a couple of our players that were on the wrong side of the tracks in the States that came and gave good chats about it could have gone either way for them. So they're out in front of the community, and that was an important aspect to me. Like I say, what brought me to the Rocks originally was meeting somebody through the children's panel that I sit on, and I should just say that I was sat on it as a member rather than I wasn't a hall before the children's panel. Maybe should clarify that, but it's a big thing that we do here. It's mostly in the west of Scotland, but we're through to West Lothian and up north or something, and when a player comes here, and we've actually walked away, and anecdotally players last season that we wanted to sign, they couldn't or wouldn't sign up to the community work, so we didn't bring them here. We have a charity partner, SSF, that are round the corner in the hub here at the Emirates, and they deliver the work. So they get a bunch of money from, amongst other things, like the Proceeds of Crime Act, and they then deliver the work back into the community, and they use our players to do that. So it is an income stream for us, but it's a big part of who we are, and it's a big part of our sort of ethos and our culture, and it's in the DNA of the team. And a lot of it centres around the east end of Glasgow, and Glasgow in particular.
And you talked there about getting marketing money in, getting money to getting crowds in. How do you grow a business like this? So you're starting, okay, so the business, the franchise is 17 years old, but in effect, you're starting from zero.
Yeah.
You've got football clubs in Scotland who might be a one club town.
Yeah.
and they don't appear from the outside anyway to be doing any form of marketing. The marketing seems to be, well, you know that we play on a Saturday, so you can turn up and watch us if you want. And they stick with their, and they've had the same core support now for 40 years. The average attendance at somewhere like Aberdeen has not budged. It goes marginally up and down. If they have a good season, it's 12,000. If they have a bad season, it's 9. It doesn't really change.
Yeah.
But you've got to take this. You talked about average attendance at 2,000, but that's from zero.
Yeah.
How do you get the message out there? How do you grow a business like this?
It's a tough question, but when a really competitive space in this city for people to go, budgets are tight and everybody's pocket, and the family budget can only go so far. So it is tough competing, specifically with football in Glasgow. But we have a core fan base that have been with us since the beginning. We've probably got a core 500-600-700 fans that will be here at every single game, and then there's a floating 3,000 or 4,000 mm-hmm. will come in 2 or 3 games a season. So I think what we need, and we don't have many away fans.
Yeah.
I mean, there's maybe a bus full that'll travel with the team that comes up here, so it's pretty much a home crowd. And trying to be a bit innovative around how you get those guys here is something I think we're pretty good at. And our league publish numbers for social media, and when it comes to Twitter and Facebook, we rank the most in terms of followers, likes, and retweets. We're actually at the top of the tree when it comes to social media aspect to it. But I think that it's engaging with our fans, and not just by putting something on our website, because it's okay for old guys like me and you mm-hmm. to consume our media that way. And it's funny how quickly websites have become old hat. But what our fans need, they need an app, they need messages, they need a good Twitter feed during games, live offers. We're doing a lot on Groupon and a lot of offers on tickets, but it's just trying to engage with them, and then making sure when they actually come to a game that they want to come back,
mm-hmm.
and that I'm quite happy giving away a few tickets to people, but I don't want, that's not a good business model.
No.
But I'm quite happy to give away some tickets. If I have to give away 10 tickets, that means that 3 or 4 people are going to buy tickets going forward, then I'm okay with that. But it is a tough space, but it's something that we do very well here, and we're nearly sold out in our smaller arena. So a smaller arena has a capacity just under 2,000, and most games were sold out for that. We have a bigger arena here as well that we'll use 4 times next season. Now that is 6,000 seats, mm-hmm. which is a big jump, and if it's not got 4,000 people in it, we're going to be rattling around in there. So how we actually double the crowd is a challenge for us. Now the good news is I'm only looking for another 2,000 fans, but the bad news is that's doubling our attendances. So I think we've got to be really creative in the marketing and the communication that we do. I think in all honesty we could do a wee bit more support from the council and from just general sport in Scotland. I think mm-hmm. we are a minority sport, we get that, we know where we are in the food chain, but we're reasonably good at this. You imagine a football team mm-hmm. playing out of this city that consistently finished in the top 2 or 3 of a British league.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be phenomenal.
Yep.
Imagine, I'd like to imagine such a thing, right? But that's where we are. We're competing in a British league. We're arguably the second or third best team in the league right now. We've got one team in Leicester that are becoming the Celtic of the league. They're starting to dominate, and they're the benchmark for where we need to be on the court. But it is a challenge, but I think that our season ticket renewals finished at the end of May, mm-hmm. and we've got more season tickets now than we had for the whole of last season, and I think about 25% of our season tickets, and these are measured in hundreds by the way,
yeah.
But about 25% of them are new season tickets,
mm-hmm.
so we're getting new fans that are committing to a family season ticket or to 1 or 2 season tickets, so the numbers are heading in the right direction. But I would say there's no lot of things thin about me. My patience is one of them,
right.
It needs to go faster. I want to be in that big arena with 4,000 and 5,000 in it every single week.
And I suppose part of that is media coverage.
Yeah.
And if I think, you know, you just said it's amazing how quickly websites can become old hat. We can deride newspapers and, you know, the mainstream MSM, the mainstream media, Scottish mainstream media, but the reality is they still have hundreds of thousands of readers of newspapers,
yes.
and
yep.
they still have tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of listeners to the likes of Sports Sound. And how do you get the media to move away from their saturation but not in very great depth coverage of football to come into a sport like this?
I mean, it's a million dollar question, and I think that we get There's a couple of publications. There's a couple of really good journalists that are invested in the game on a personal level that really, and publications like the Herald and the Record and the Sun, you probably don't notice it, but we've got stuff in there every single week, and you probably maybe one or two people listen to this and now notice it a bit more. But we're in the Herald every week, we're in the Record, and we're in the Sun. We're on TV every now and then when there's something happening, and more to the point, when there's nothing else going on in the city, we generally get a bit of attention. The fact of the matter is, the thing that will make this more interesting to the media, and the thing that will put another 2,000 people through the door every week, is by being successful. Because I think that we've come so close, like I say, with the Nearly Men, always the bridesmaid, 9 finals, 9 losses. If we can turn it into a championship winning team and a cup winning team, I think I know that people in Glasgow like being part of something successful. And let's face it, it's Scotland. I was at Hampden on Saturday. I don't go to many Scotland games. The atmosphere was absolutely brilliant, although it felt like a defeat at the end. But it was great, and seeing that's the first Scotland-England game I've ever been to, football, been a few rugby games. It's Scotland-England every single week for us, because we're the only Scottish team in that British league. And if we're winning in that league, that will give us coverage on TV, more coverage, more column inches in the papers and on the websites. People will hear about it. And I actually work with a guy that, cringing as I say it now, Field Your Dreams Marketing, if you build it they will come. But the fact of the matter is, if we're successful and people see and hear us being successful, they'll come along and get a bit of it. And it is, like I say, it's Scotland, England every week, and who doesn't want to be involved in that if you're successful?
Well, you've got to be realistic about the if you build it they will come principle, and there are some things, if you build it nobody will ever turn up. But equally, if I stretch my neck round, I might even be able to see the hydro from here. Go back 10, 12 years and say to someone, we're going to build a 12, 14,000 capacity indoor arena in Glasgow. People would have said, why? Well, for all the big concerts. What?
Yeah.
There's 2, 3. But actually, by cities having those types of arena events, locations, they've now started to get filled. And I suppose that's where you're coming from, that we are so saturated with football that there surely is a niche for another sport that's successful.
I think there is. I mean, and you think about where we're sat right now, and I guess most people listening to this podcast is going to know where the Emirates Arena is, because it's Celtic Park. And like you see, you look around, and I could hit maybe a driver and hit Celtic Park. I'd have to have a few more golf clubs to hit Hampden. But when I look around here and I see what Celtic have done around their own footprint, and when I see the investments we've put in around the sort of shadow of Celtic Park, all the regeneration thing that's been done around the Commonwealth Games, just in general, it looks really good. There's some spare bits of land around here. Celtic's trying to push through some fantastic plans, and I think from working out, forgetting I'm a Celtic fan, as somebody playing out of the Emirates Arena, I'm desperate for something like a hotel. There's just no hotel options around here. A Premier Inn along the other end of London Road, or other than that, you're going to the city. I want to have access to facilities like that. So this sort of square mile, if you like, has become the real sports hub. And we want to be part of that. Like I said, if we're successful, I think they will come. I'm very encouraged by what they do out at the ice hockey at Brayhead. They're getting 4,000 and 5,000 for a lot of their games, so that would be a minority sport as well. We've got the netball franchise plays out of here as well, the Sirens, and they're getting a few hundred people, 1,000 a week watching their games. So we are minority sports, but I think there's space for us. We're not looking to get 20,000 to 30,000 people every week. We're looking for 3,000 to 4,000 to 5,000.
I mean, the UK as a whole is a football dominated country, Scotland in particular, but in Glasgow, but the UK as a whole is football dominated. And you've just talked about trying to find a window, or trying to find a niche within it. And I know you're only 10 weeks in, but it just strikes me, has the sport looked at running a season opposite to the football season?
Well, it's in some ways it is like football. We play in a league, the BBL, the British Basketball League, and they're under the umbrella of the BBF, the British Basketball Foundation, and then they're under an umbrella of FIBA, which is just like FIFA.
Yeah.
And there's certain structures, and the season pretty much is the same the world round. Mm-hmm. I mean, the playoffs are just finishing in the States just now, and it sort of works to the same calendar. So we have tried to shift around the days in which we play, and we try and avoid the football, and mm-hmm. and most games in our league, in fact all games in our league, are 7:30 on a Friday night or 5:00 on a Sunday. So I don't think we're competing with football, and those timings sort of work as well.
Mm-hmm.
And most of our games would be on the Sunday slot at 5:00, and that's a dead slot for a lot of people. If they're going to football on a Sunday, they tend to be home, or if they're having a family lunch, it tends to be done, or if they're watching the football on the telly, it tends to be done there as well. So we are where we are, and we're not going to be changing our season. It's how we create if we can be around that and getting people here, and more importantly, because we can get people here, the first game of the season they'll be here, and there'll be 6,000 people in our arena because we've got 3 months to sell tickets for it.
Uh-huh.
And then we've got a game at Christmas, and our Christmas game's always sold out because we know it's coming, and we've tapped into a market there that people will bring their families along mm-hmm. for the Christmas fixture, and there'll be another so we can sell them, but it's how you make those customers come back, and that comes down to the match day experience. It's a great arena, it's easy to park, there's as many parking spaces here as there is seats, so it's easy to come to. And I had never been here, and I was only at a handful of games at the end of the season, and I brought loads of friends and family, none of which had seen a basketball game other than on the TV, and they all came here, and they're mostly football fans and mostly Celtic fans, but a couple of rugby guys as well, and I know they came here thinking it was going to be pretty rubbish.
Yeah.
And I know they loved it, they absolutely loved the experience. And that anybody that likes sport, I defy them to come here for a game and not enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
It's then how you actually motivate them to want to pay and come back and watch 5 games a season, and then 10 next season, and the following season buy a season ticket. I think that comes with success.
You talked earlier about the 4 or 5 games that are in the bigger arena, and you just said the first ones are the big arena because we've got 3 months to sell the tickets for it. How do you decide the 4 or 5 games that are? Is it just as simple as first one that we're going to have a long run at it so we can sell the tickets, the Christmas one we're going to have a long run at, it's the Christmas period, is that pretty much?
That is pretty much it. I mean, we don't have, similar to most sports, we don't have a wee bit of control over our fixtures, but we tend to get who we get in our fixtures. So like I say, within reason, doesn't matter who we play in the first game, we'll pretty much sell it out. And again, the Christmas, just because it is, it's then how we pick the next 2 games, more importantly how we pick one of them. I think the last game, on the assumption we make the playoffs and see the top 8 teams in the league make the playoffs, mm-hmm. it'd be very disappointing if we didn't make the playoffs. I think we've only not made it once in about the last 10 or 12 years, so it would be finding that third game and then probably our first game in the playoffs, to give us a right good chance and having a run at going to the playoff final, which will be next September at the O2 in London. So you go to the O2, the final this year, sold out the O2, I think it was 14,000 people mm-hmm. at the O2 final. It's Leicester and Newcastle, and big deal, fireworks, Tinchy Strider halftime show, live on BBC2, quite the big event. So that's where we want to be seen competing at that level, and winning trophies. It's well overdue here.
So describe, I know you've touched on it, just give me a full description of a game day here, a 7:30 tip off,
well done. You're doing better than me.
Yeah, it's written on the back of my hand.
And it's a court, not a pitch. It tends to be, there's a really good area where the fans are live in the concourse here, there's really good merchandise mm-hmm. that's on sale, everybody's involved in the hot dogs, a few guys and the beer and the wine and what mm-hmm. have you. So like foam fingers, best thing that happens to me is you bring your kids, they buy foam fingers and they leave it on the seats, and you've got to buy them again when you come back the next time. So it tends to be, and they'll go down, most people tend to get there sort of 10-15 minutes before tip off because the cheerleaders are on there, there's always something happening, competition to win stuff on the court that you can get involved in, quite good prizes. It tends to be the lead up, and then it really is a big sort of build up, and the players come running out to the music and the cheerleaders, and the music's playing through the sound system. It's a noisy experience. It really it gets really pumped up, and the fans are very, very passionate about it. Really, and every game I've been to has been like that. There's no been a rubbish game in terms of atmosphere, and even games that we've got beaten, I've only seen us get beat once. Unfortunately, it was in the playoffs. It was still like a really noisy, rowdy crowd. And so the game gets going, it's four quarters of 10 minutes, and the game from sort of start to finish, it's about an hour and 10 minutes, an hour and 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then at half time, we either have like the kids on that we've been working in the community with for the previous 2 weeks. We'll have the best of the kids. They'll play a half time game. There's draws going on. There's like free throw competitions. It's a busy half time. And at the same time, everybody's up and down buying juice and hot dogs and nachos and popcorn and mm-hmm. beers and ciders. It's quite an enjoyable experience for that. And then, let's say, from you walk through the door to when you leave, an hour and a half, you're done. So it suits the attention span of a lot of kids as well. But most people leave relatively happy. And at the end of the game, I guess, unlike football, you can get right up close to the players. Uh-huh. Players are quite happy hanging around, getting pictures taken with the kids and sponsors and what have you. So it's quite an intimate experience for the players. It's not like hanging around Celtic Park for an hour waiting the players come out to try and grab their autograph before they jump in their cars and go home. The players are very, very accessible on a match day.
And how much does it cost?
Tickets are about, for an adult, you're looking at about £12
right.
For a game, and it's a family ticket of four for less than £30. So it's a significant amount of money, but it's not in comparison to other sports in the city. But you get a season ticket for less than £250 if you buy it that way. And there's always offers on there in Groupon if you look hard enough.
And when, so if people are looking at this thinking, do you know what, I might dip my toe in the water, they're going to have a look. When will they know the fixtures and how will they find out more about it?
Well, if they start looking out for us in the media, they'll actually, it's like anything else, that subconscious kicks in and you suddenly see something that you've never seen before and you keep seeing it all the time. Mm-hmm. We are there in the media. I think our fixtures are going to be out in the next month or so. So we're announcing a new coach this week and we'll see some recruitment over the coming months. We tend to have four or five core Scottish guys here mm-hmm. That are the bones of the Scottish team, and they're also in the Team GB
right.
team. Our captain here, Kieran Achara, Kieran from Falkirk. We've got Gareth, who's re-signed for next year, and Johnny. They're already committed here next year. Probably another couple of Scottish guys, and then we'll bring in some imported players. Where we are in the food chain here is we'll get a lot of guys that have come from the States that have been through the college system, probably at 14 and 15 thinking they were going to be NBA stars.
Yeah.
Never quite made it.
Mm-hmm.
And the British League would be the lowest profile and the lowest paid league in Europe, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
So if a player decides, look, I'm not going to be an NBA player, I'm going to get a real job, that's it, or they'll look for a contract in Europe at mm-hmm. one of the big European teams. And if they don't get a contract in Europe, they'll come, this is familiar, right? They'll come and they'll play in the British Basketball League for a season or two with a view to getting a move to Europe.
Yeah.
So players here would be earning maybe £20,000 for an 8 month period. But you go to the big teams in Europe, and the big teams are the football teams.
Yeah, so if someone goes, say someone came to Glasgow and they actually were not bad and they managed to get to Real Madrid, Barcelona, yeah. What would be the jump in their salary?
I mean, if we go, our players here get an average, you only pay the players for the season. So there's an 8.
Because there's a salary cap in the league, isn't there?
There is a salary cap, but in all honesty, nobody touches it. Nobody right. touches it in terms of the salary cap. But the players will get, say for example, £20,000 for an 8 month period. They'll also get accommodation, mm-hmm. they'll get use of a car. So it's not rubbish, but it's not.
Yeah, so it works out to more than £20,000 by the time.
Because they've got their housing covered, they've got a car covered. So in £20,000, the pro rata. So they're earning. You go to the top level of European basketball, and it's funny, if you look at the top level of European basketball, Real Madrid, Barcelona, CSK Moscow, Maccabi Tel Aviv, Galatasaray, it's all football teams
yeah.
that are owning the sport in their city.
Mm-hmm.
Quite an interesting idea, I think. But if you look at those players in, as examples,
and in a city where it's principally there's one team that's just bigger than everybody else.
Yeah, so a lot like Glasgow.
Yeah,
a lot like Glasgow. So you go somewhere like Barcelona or even to Greece or Turkey, Israel, these guys are getting hundreds of thousands a year, and they're mobbed in the street. Basketball is a huge sport, obviously in the States, but in Europe, pretty much everywhere except the UK, mm-hmm. it's a big sport, it's high profile, they're playing in front of 15,000-20,000. You Google some of the ultras that they've got, they're equivalent to the Green Brigade, and they're there with a pyro behind it. They've got 20,000 people at games in Greece and in Spain. It's quite the experience. It's like wall-to-wall Green Brigade,
yeah.
At some of these games, and say so 20,000-30,000 people. And if you've been to New Camp, the arena that they've got there built for Barcelona is something else. I've not been inside it, but I've been outside it a couple of times and had a look at it, and I've seen it on TV. But now these guys, so they'll come here with a view to getting a move to Europe.
Yeah.
Or you get the flip side where they're, and the ages of the players, it's the same as football. Once you get into your 30s, you're on borrowed time professionally. And a lot of the guys, you'll get guys maybe coming here that are maybe 32, 33, that are coming from Europe, deciding that they're going to have to go back maybe to the States or to Canada or somewhere, want to put off getting a real job.
Uh-huh.
So they'll come here for a year or two to keep playing basketball before they go on and get, in inverted commas, a real job. So that's where we are in the food chain. But I think it's important that we've got a core element of players here that the fans build a relationship with, mm-hmm. and a bit of empathy, because if we were getting the players out every season, a new lot in, I think it's important in any club that fans build a rapport and an empathy, yeah. and a bit of a relationship with the players that are here. But I've given a very, very, I've not even answered your question, but I would say our fixtures will come out next month, and there'll be nothing really, and our first game will be either the last weekend of September or the first weekend in October. It'll be a Sunday afternoon, and I'm sure you'll be talking about it then anyway in your podcast, Brian, because you strike me as somebody who would be keen to support us here. But that would be a good game to come in, and you'll see it at its best, because it will be that opening game of the season. It'll be the big arena, mm-hmm. 6,000 fans in there, there'll be plenty of fireworks, banging music, hot cheerleaders, good game, the whole experience. You can have a beer, have your hot dog, and you can get right in amongst it, and hopefully you'll want to come back.
Okay, so people just need to keep, what's the Twitter, Facebook, website?
The Twitter, I imagine, is at Glasgow Rocks, and the website is glasgowrocks.co.uk, but I think it's quite an easy thing to search for.
Yeah. So I will say, Duncan, one more thing. How is Celtic going to do in the Champions League next season?
I've got massive expectations on this next season. This season has been phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I've absolutely loved this season. Last season was my first year living back in Scotland, and I was really disappointed that my Celtic experience last year wasn't all that. But this season has been, for me, it's up there with the centenary season, 87-88. After the ball this season, I went away a couple of European games. I went out to Germany for the game as well. I went down to Man City. But I think, first of all, it's not a given we'll qualify. Mm-hmm. It's tough to qualify.
Yeah.
I think we're in a much better position going into this season's qualification than we were last season. I think it was a flip of a coin last season whether we qualified or not. Whereas this year, I'd be really, as well as being disappointed, I'd be surprised, mm-hmm. if we didn't make the league stages. And I think somebody told me that it looks like we're going to be in the third pot. I don't know if that's true, that we're going to be in the third pot for the group stages if we make it.
I think it's on the cusp, depending on.
But either way, and I guess if we're in the fourth pot, we're the fourth pot everybody wants to avoid, and for the third pot, maybe that's the one that everybody wants.
Yeah.
But I think, I don't see any reason why. It looks to me what Brendan Rodgers has done this season, as the season's gone on, he's learned. Mm-hmm. And I think he probably learned a lot, and he's probably still applying the pseudocreme for that visit to the new camp.
Yeah.
Last season, if we go to the new camp, as we inevitably will, because we always go to the new camp,
I know. Yeah.
As we go there, I don't think we get beat 7-0 again.
No.
Out there, I'm really hoping every year that we're in the Champions League, every year I watch the draw, and every time I want Real Madrid, I want to go to Madrid and watch Celtic play in the Bernabeu.
Last year when we drew Barcelona, I put something on Twitter about, oh, not Barcelona again, and Tom English had a real go at me. But it wasn't, we should just be thankful in the Champions League, we've not been in it, and should be grateful and playing all these great teams. Yeah, I love playing Barcelona, but Celtic played Real Madrid in season 79-80. and that was a very, very long time ago. Many people listening to this podcast won't have even been alive when we played that. Many others might have just been alive and don't remember it. It was a 72,000 sellout at Celtic Park, and tickets were two. It was an old ticket game before you got many old ticket games, and it was two tickets a person. So it was really difficult to get to that. Since then, we've played Barcelona, and it's been great. But I've been in the Nou Camp three times.
But at least that.
So,
and it's actually not a good experience to go as a fan.
No, because you're sitting miles away. You can't see. I mean, I don't know if the Bernabeu will be any better, but I'd like to give it a go.
I'd love a different city, and I'd love.
I've been in Manchester a couple of times. We've been in Lisbon to play Benfica a couple of times. You just like. It's not to. I mean, it is part of the criticism you could chuck at the Champions League. If you look at the teams that we might get in the qualifying process, it is the same teams that we might have got in the qualifying process previously. And if you look at who we might get in the group stages, things are starting to, it's the same teams over and over again, because what's happening is, well, you can see with the Espanyolification of Glasgow, we need to make a complete mess of it to not be the only Scottish team who've got a chance of playing Champions League football for as long as I can see.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you, and I think that I love the Champions League, and the Champions League nights at Celtic, you can't, certainly as a Celtic fan and arguably as a football fan, there's nowhere better to be. I feel that when you watch a Champions League in the qualifying, it's a wee bit stale now. It's great for us to get there, but for the bigger teams, it's a lot of empty stadiums, and it feels to me like there's a cycle coming round where something's going to change in that Champions League in terms of the format. I don't know if it's the clubs forming their own competitions. It feels to me like within the next few years something different will happen. You're right that I imagine that 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now, if that happens, we're going to be in a fantastic position as a club to get an invitation to the top table, or to compete to have access to that top table, and that excites all of us. But in terms of next season, I'd be surprised and disappointed if we didn't make the group stages. And equally, my expectation next season, because I think it's physically impossible to improve domestically on this season. So I think a qualification.
Well, we could not draw so many games.
No, this is true. This is true. But I think to improve that domestically would be unbelievable. And I don't think you're going to go through and maybe lose 4 games we drew this season.
True. Rangers at home. Ross County away,
Inverness
and Partick Thistle. Two at home, two away.
That was it. Four draws. So domestically, I'll settle for the same next season. But I think genuinely, we should be looking to come out of that group. And right now, somebody said to me, "You'll make the Champions League, and you'll finish third and qualify for the Europa League." I'd quite like that, because that gives us another wee journey. We could actually go quite far in that competition.
I agree, because. I'm led to believe that Brendan thinks we are not a worse team than Ajax, who got to Europa League final.
And I think, in all honesty, we're not going to win the Champions League.
No.
We could win the Europa League. It's not impossible to think of us winning that Europa League.
We finish second in the group, we go in the last 16, and if the draw is really fortunate, we might have a fantastic night and get to the last 8. And let's be realistic, we would get knocked out of the last 8, and that would be incredible, don't get me wrong, and I'd be chuffed to bits if we did it. It's highly likely we'd get knocked out in the last 16, right? Finish third in the group and play Europa League football, and with a reasonable draw, get to the final, at least the semi-finals.
Yeah.
With a difficult draw, you're still looking, we could get to the quarterfinal, semi-finals, Europa League.
No, I don't think that we're a million miles away from that. Although I remember a guy in this podcast walking through the group stages how we're going to do the Champions League this season. And I think we only dropped about 3 points.
Yeah, but I actually have the same feeling. I always remember, was it the season before Seville? Rangers had got to maybe like the quarterfinals or something, and they get knocked out. They get knocked out by Feyenoord on penalties. Or they get knocked out, may not have even been penalties, may have just been they lost 3-2 in Rotterdam. I just remember going into work the next day and saying to one of my colleagues who's a Rangers fan, you've just given me great hope. I've been told all my life that I'll never see a Scottish team in a European final. And see, after your performance, I think we could get to, I think we could get to UEFA Cup final.
And we did, and they did as well.
And they did as well. Yeah. And I look at, and I've got the same sensation now with Ajax getting to Europa League final last season, and the performances we put in, drawing away in Germany, drawing away in Manchester, drawing at home in, against Man City, and as you just said, the learning experience against Barcelona. I looked at that and thought, if we can finish third in the Champions League, yeah, I want to finish first or second in the group stages, and that's great.
Of course.
And I'm not going to, if we finish second, go, no, I'm disappointed I wish to finish third. But if we could finish third, I just think we could have a crack at Europa League.
No, and it makes such a nice season as well, that you get the experience of the Champions League pre-Christmas, and then you know you've got a wee European adventure after Christmas. Mm-hmm. And I think that much as the league is great fun, to have that wee carrot that you're getting back into Europe after the turn of the year, it's just, it puts icing on the cake, or even the cherry on the cake for us. But it's just, I'm really, really looking forward to next season. This season was just absolutely phenomenal. I've not had as much fun, I don't think, ever, actually. Now maybe I'm older and I'm able to enjoy it more now. See, the centenary season was my favourite season, but I think this has been my favourite season watching Celtic. I've absolutely loved it, and I see what the club's doing, not just on the pitch, the stuff that we're doing off the pitch, and seeing the celebrations around the Lisbon Lions, and very, very proud. And I've always been proud to be a Celtic fan, but the exposure we've got and the publicity we've got and seeing our club in all its glory, not just on the pitch but the off the field celebrations, makes me feel really good to be a Celtic fan.
Maybe you'll get European goalie with the Glasgow Rocks.
No, that would be special. That would be special.
Well, with that, I will say, Duncan, thanks very much.
Thank you, sir.
I hope you enjoyed that podcast, but as you can see, Celtic fans always got on to talking about the current position with the team because everything's so fantastic. And the eagle-eyed amongst you will have noticed why we specifically picked today, Thursday night, to be recording this podcast, because the Glasgow Rocks appointed the new coach yesterday. Bit of a coup for them, apparently. Not that I'm a basketball fan, so I don't really know. Tony, and I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, Garbelletto, who is the Team GB coach, has been appointed the new coach of Glasgow Rocks. So, hope you enjoyed the podcast. That was me, Harry Brady, with him, Duncan Smiley. There will be more podcasts along soon. Just enough time for me to say thanks for downloading, thanks for listening, thanks for getting anything you send in by email, contact us on Twitter, etc. Good night, and God bless. Good night. Get your rocks off, honey, shake it now.